Exodus chapter 2. I'm going to be reading this morning from the English Standard Version. Let me invite you to grab whatever translation you have. That'll be my favorite one, the one that's in your lap. And this morning, I want to talk to you a little bit about the issues of destiny, of character, and determination. Now, here's the thing. One of the things that we know from a sociological standpoint is that destiny can be one of the most empowering or one of the most disabling factors in a person's life. Recent studies show that despite some of the lowest SAT and ACT scores in history, that despite some of the lowest reading scores, with a majority of people reading below grade level, and also in the math and science area, us falling not even in the top 20 globally. That means that there are several third world countries that surpass us in their math and science scores today. Despite all that evidence, to the contrary, did you know that 50% of millennials, that's young people my children's age, believe that he or she is exceptional and will one day be famous because of their exceptional qualities, although they could not name one that they would be noted for. But they got lots of trophies from playing soccer that, you know, whether they won or not and things like that, and they've been told that they are outstanding. And yet here was what we know is that whenever a person has destiny but no way to fulfill it, that it is one of the most paralyzing things in their life. On the other hand, we also know from a number of studies that once a person has a sense of destiny and actually have some of the things necessary for fulfilling that destiny, things like confidence from their either intelligence, learned skill set, and character being the most important, that those persons are most often likely to be determined and to actually succeed. In other words, they don't succeed without that sense of destiny, but they don't exceed with a sense of destiny simply just because they've been told they're exceptional. When we add to that all these different pieces, once we put all those pieces together, here's the thing, is that the person with a sense of destiny, a person with character, and a person with determination is virtually unstoppable. We're continuing our series here in the book of Exodus, talking about how God calls, provides, and fulfills. And today we're looking at Moses, a man of destiny. Although his actual call will not take place until later in his life, really what we're seeing is that from birth, he was a man with a sense of destiny. There was destiny over his birth. There was destiny in the early details of his life. And we discover how those things that his character and his determination permeate his life along with that sense of destiny in which he is able to fulfill all that God has for his life. At the same time, as we zero in, I want to look at how that role of those things, of that character and determination affect it, and then ultimately even want to talk about some of his failures in the light of all of that. So Exodus chapter 2, beginning in verse 1, as I said, I'll be reading from the English Standard Version. You read along in whatever translation you have. Now a man from the house of Levi went and took a wife, a Levite woman, and the woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that the child was a fine child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could hide him no longer, she took for him and made a basket of bulrushes and daubed it with bitumen and pitch. And she put the child in it and placed it among the reeds by the riverbank. And his sister stood at a distance to know what would be done to him. And now the daughter of Pharaoh came down to the river to bathe. Her and her young and the young women walked along the side of the river, and she saw the basket among the reeds and sent the servant women, and she took it. And when she opened it, she saw that there was a child, and behold, the baby was crying. And she took pity on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrew children." Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call a nurse for you from among the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." So the girl went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take the child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him. And when the child grew older, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she named him Moses because she said, "I drew him out of water." And one day, when Moses had grown up, he went out to his people and looked on their burden and saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. And he looked this way and that, and seeing that no one was there, he struck down the Egyptian and hid him in the sand, and he went out the next day. Behold, two Hebrews were struggling together, and he said to the man in the wrong, "Why do you strike your companion?" He answered, "Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?" Then Moses was afraid and thought, "Surely the thing is known." And when Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. And the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and saved them and watered their flock. And when they came home to their father, Reuel, he said, "How is it that you have come home so soon today?" They said, "An Egyptian delivered us out of the hands of the shepherds and drew water for us and watered the flock." And he said to his daughters, "Then where is he? Why have you left the man? Call him that he may eat bread." And Moses was content to dwell with the man, and he gave Moses his daughter Zipporah, and she gave birth to a son, and he called his name Gershom, for he said, "I have been a sojourner in a foreign land." During those many days, the king of Egypt died, and the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help. Their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God, and God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob, and God saw the people of Israel, and God knew. Well, as I said, destiny can be one of the most powerful tools in our toolbox. Over the years, I've known a number of people who have had a sense of the call of God on their life, and I saw some of them answer it, and I saw others who honestly did not have a real, earnest call of God on their life and tried to answer a call that wasn't their own, and it became very destructive to their life. Sadly, one of the most painful and debilitating realities in the lives of those who have had a call in their life and never fulfilled it is that they sense that their whole lives have been stripped out from under them, and nothing that they put their hand to has ever brought them real peace, real success, real fulfillment. On the other hand, I've watched over my 25-plus years in ministry and seen numerous pastors, people who had no real call in their life but were trying to fulfill something, someone else's desire, someone else's idea, because they went to Bible college and they thought they had to do something with it, and they pursued it. And the average tenure in ministry is somewhere between 3 to 7 years and an average of 3 churches in those 7 years, after which they never darken the door of a church ever again. They don't just walk out on church, they walk out on their faith. Concerns me greatly. Many of those people that I went to Bible college with no longer speak of their relationship with the Lord. A number of others have left the ministry and no longer attend church, even though their faith is still somewhat intact. But I see the fruit of what has happened in their lives, and it makes me deeply sad, not only because of what's happened and the cost to the whole church. Literally thousands of people leave the pulpit every month. But the reality is that this whole issue of call on a person's life and a sense of God being with them or not weighs heavy on who a person is. You know, oftentimes when we talk about call and things like that, we always bring it down to being ministry-oriented. But here's the thing that I know. Some of the people that I've known that most have fulfilled their destinies have not been involved in ministry per se, but just simply heard the call of God on their life for what it is that God was giving them to do. Two of the people that I think of most when I think of that is, one is my wife and the other is my son Tyler. My wife knew from the time she was a little girl that she wanted to be a math teacher. She used to set the room up with her brothers and she would teach math on the board and give them assignments and homework and everything. And then when she got into college and she started into her math program, her dad said, "You can't do that with your math. You have to be an engineer." She went into engineering school, didn't like it, got a minor in engineering, still got a degree in math, and then for years wanted to teach math but never would do it because her dad told her that was not a good use of her skills, and so she just didn't do it for years and years and years. Today, my wife is a math teacher. Let me tell you, she loves teaching math, but one of the coolest things for me is to sit with some of her students and hear them talk about my wife and her ability to teach and watch how her teaching math has, like, set people free who are scared to death of math. I knew a woman that, a good friend of ours, Allison Carnes, who is in Africa as a missionary now, but when she was in school and had to take math and she thought she couldn't even pass, and Dawn tutored her, and she ended up getting a minor in math just because she fell in love with math from Dawn teaching her. And I see that whole sense of destiny coming to fruition in my wife's life, even though someone tried to keep her from it with the best of intent. But the truth is that was her destiny, and when she started to fulfill it and walk in it, she experienced great blessing. The other, my son Tyler, from the time he was 5 years old, knew he wanted to be an aerospace engineer. I don't mean he said to me, "Daddy, I want to be an aerospace engineer." He said, "I want to work on airplanes. I want to work on the motors, and I want to make them do these things." And I said, "That's called an aerospace engineer." And he said, "Okay." And the rest of his life, he told everybody he was going to be an aerospace engineer. And when he graduated from college, he went to work to be an aerospace engineer. And I waited a year, and after that year was up, I said, "Son, your whole life you've wanted to be an aerospace engineer. Now you're it. Tell me, was it worth it?" And I remember that those words just set my heart on fire when he said, "Dad, it's even better than I ever imagined." I love it. I love watching people, not just my son and my wife. I love watching people walk in their destiny. You see, destiny isn't just about being called to become a pastor or not to become a pastor. It's that God has created you uniquely, individually. He's shaped your life. He has put qualities and put you in a family and all those things very much on purpose. And there is a plan that God has for your life. And when those things begin to unfold and you watch people walk in their destiny, it is one of the most powerful things in the whole world. In the life of Moses and him fulfilling his great destiny, one of the people that's so instrumental in his life is his mother, Jochebed. Now, if you think about it, Jochebed in many ways is just the typical mom. I mean, she had a child and she thought her child was what? Special, the best baby in the whole world. They all are, aren't they? I mean, they should be. If they're not, I'm so sorry that you've missed out on that, because they really are. They're beautiful. They're wonderful. It's a great gift from God. And Jochebed knew that her son Moses really was that special child. But here's the thing that stands out about Jochebed. Jochebed, like every other mama, thought her child was the most beautiful and the most special. But Jochebed did something that the other women of her day and in her situation didn't do. She risked her life. You see, understand that Moses was not the only baby born during that time, but he is the only one that was put in a basket of reeds. He was the only one that was kept in secret, and that Jochebed risked her life because of her confidence in who this child was and could be. Jochebed risked her life to keep a child safe for even a little while longer. She planned made a plan in the scope of just hopelessness in trying to rescue her son from death. She couldn't hide him forever, but she was willing to give up, not willing to roll over, not willing to quit without a fight. And I really like her. I think God did too. Because listen what happens, how God responds in kind to her and rescues the life of her son. In the midst of her character, in the midst of her crisis, Jochebed's character is what prevailed. Let me explain to you how I even know that. Not only do I know it because of the fact that she was willing to risk her life, but look at her daughter Miriam. I want you to think about the day and time which they lived in, and this little slave girl, of all things, walking along the river trying to find out what's going to happen to her brother. And when her brother is found, she does the unthinkable. She speaks up not just to an adult, which would have been unthinkable in that day, but she speaks up to the queen, to the princess of the Nile. She's a lowly slave who could beat, and she risked life and limb and says, "Do you want me to go get someone to nurse that child for you?" She risks everything. She didn't know if that woman would smite the child and her in that moment, but she risks everything. Why? Because she's like Mama Jochebed. She believes in destiny. She believes in that what God is doing, even in the midst of their difficulty and their trial and everything else. She is a person of character, raised by a mother of character, and they get to raise Pharaoh's daughter, their own family member. You see, here's the deal. There is nothing chance or luck about what was happening. God was able to entrust Moses with destiny because of character, because of his mother's character, because of his sister's character, and because of his character. You know, one of the things that when we look through the scripture that I'm always intrigued by is how people of destiny get to their destiny. Mary was just a young girl when she said, "May it be done to me as the Lord has said." What kind of character does it take to step up and to fulfill a destiny? It's difficult. I'm sure she didn't have fully a grasp of all that was about to happen to her. But in that moment, she didn't think about all the things that she might lose or the difficulties she might encounter. But instead, she stepped up to the plate. Real destiny is not luck or fate. Real destiny is a gift from God that takes root in the seedbed of character. Now, one of the things when we talk about destiny and character, and like Moses, thank you. About Moses, is you might object and say, well, but Moses, you know, killed the Egyptian. He's a murderer. And you would be right. But what you and I might discover on further study and further looking at the situation is we might notice the character that permeates Moses' life across the board. Step back and see not a man who stepped in just to murder someone, but to see a man who stepped into a situation of injustice, who accidentally killed an unjust, merciless, murderous taskmaster, and who feared reporting it because he knew he lived in an unjust society under an unjust king, because he lived in that king's household and knew how he treated people, including his own race, even as he lived in his home. You see, one of the things that's always intriguing to me is that when you look throughout the minor prophets, that one of the things, the primary issue on which a nation is judged over and over again is not by its prosperity or anything else, but how it treats those who are poor and powerless. At the height of Israel's laws, at the height of their society, at the pinnacle of their religious expression, Israel came under judgment because they failed to take care of those who were powerless and poor. It's the reality of all the prophets. God brought judgment on the nation, not because they didn't have laws in the land, not because they lacked prosperity, and not because they lacked religious attendance, but in the midst of doing those three things, there was no justice for the person who was powerless. They didn't care about what happened to the person. Not everybody had equal treatment under the law, and that's what brought the destruction of Israel above all other things. In the midst of this, we have a prophet of God not responding to the power and the glory of Egypt, but to the unmerciless treatment of a slave who was certainly powerless and unable to do anything about his condition. And he comes to his rescue. I'm not saying he did the right thing or handled it right. I'm talking about the kind of character that Moses is. Let me ask you a question. Would you want to be your character defined by a single moment in history? Nobody would. You see, the character of Moses is not defined by that moment, but by the continual behavior that we see from Moses over and over again. We see as Moses is in the situation that he's out in the desert and he comes upon these women who are out there giving the drink to their animals, and these bullies come along. What do bullies and unjust kings have in common? The mistreatment of powerless people. These poor women are out there trying to feed their animals, trying to water their animals. It's a basic need, and they're bullying them and mistreating them. And again, who does Moses? He's the defender of the weak and the powerless. You see, Moses may be the prince of Egypt. He may have been raised in power and prestige and privilege, but he saw the powerless. He saw the weak, and he became their deliverer. Doesn't that sound a little bit like what Moses did for a whole nation of Israelites? You see, God was sowing into him, and he was responding in kind. There was character in his action, the kind of character that was given to him from a small child and was nurtured through his life by the family around him. Clearly, he knew his family, because it doesn't say when they brought him to Pharaoh's daughter. But we know this. He knew enough about them that he knew his brother Aaron, and he knew his sister Miriam later on in life. So he was raised with a sense of character and integrity and personhood that mattered. Now, the other thing about Moses is this that captures my heart. Prince Moses, God prepared him. He gave him opportunity to get an Ivy League education in government. Have you ever thought about this? I mean, he is under the tutelage of the most powerful king on earth in his day. He got to go to Pharaoh State University, if you will, graduated summa cum laude to fulfill his destiny. But you know what intrigues me in all of this? Is that even though Moses had destiny written all over his life from the very beginning, that he was not exempt from having to have character, nor was he exempt from having to learn and to be prepared. Part of having character is the willingness to learn and to be trained. I'm not talking about schooling per se. It might be. Maybe your particular trade or the thing that God wants to do with you does require you to go to some schooling or whatever. But maybe it's sitting at the next to somebody who is a tradesmith, or maybe it's learning certain things about people and society, or maybe it's going to work in a certain field and learning on the job or whatever else. But that no one gets exempted, not even Moses, from having to do the hard work of learning and walking in character so that he could fulfill the destiny that God had for his life. And all too often, church, the biggest barriers to people fulfilling their destiny is the things that they're not willing to do to fulfill it. God doesn't owe you to get you to your destiny. And so even as he ran from the injustice of Egypt, he goes to this family, he's being chased and pursued as a murderer, and yet we see his character come out again as he defends the defenseless, as he helps these women that are at the well. And out of it, his future father-in-law, Jethro, has this encounter, and he says, and he invites him to come work for him and to take one of his daughters as his own. You see, Jethro already knows the character of Moses. He doesn't know all of his past, but he does know his character. And he puts him to work in his field. Now, I want you to think about this. Moses had to be a man of determination. Here he is, he's 40 years old. He's been raised for privilege. He's been raised to be a royal. He's been raised with the best of education and everything else. And then now he's in this very difficult situation. He's fled for his life through the desert. And of all things, he ends up going to work for a father-in-law who's not that much older than him. He's lost everything. And his big promotion in the world He gets to take care of the stinking sheep in the desert. Been real easy to say, well, I was raised to be a prince of Egypt. Instead, what does he do? He digs in. He serves alongside of his father-in-law. He is a humble shepherd, raises a family, spends 40 years working in the desert without privilege, without glamour, without saying, but I should have had more. Can you imagine living in a foreign land away from the culture and the people and the society that you've known for the first 40 years of your life? And you spend the next 40 years living in exile and all the difficulty that he was faced with. You know what? A lot can change in 40 years, can't it? A lot can change in 40 years. But not Moses' destiny, not his character, and not his determination. So that when God calls him, he is now 80 years old. Can I just point out something to you? We have Mary being called as a teenager. We have Moses being called at the age of 80. Whatever age you are does not keep God from working destiny and bringing your life to fulfillment. Maybe you've been waiting a long time. He'd been waiting 80 years for his destiny. Don't think, as long as you are sucking air, as long as you are drawing breath, God has a purpose and a plan for your life. You don't roll over and play dead. Amen? And no matter how young you are, it's not an excuse to do less or to say that God can't use you or to say, doesn't matter what I do right now. It does matter. It really does. God can use you when you're 12. God can use you when you're 80. Moses, in the midst of all this, 40 years in the desert and everything else, it doesn't delay all this. Really, it's just God bringing things to fulfillment. And the thing I love about this guy is the moment that he gets his opportunity, the moment that he is catapulted onto the national stage and he is now using his gifts and his calling and everything else, he doesn't forget his family, his father-in-law. He keeps them safe, and whenever he is out of harm's way, he brings them to be with him. He goes to war against the king of Egypt, but he brings his children and his wife and everybody back into safety, even fights with his own brother and sister because they said, well, they're not the right race of people. He said, these are my people. And he loved them. In fact, they got struck with leprosy when they went up against Moses. Moses doesn't abandon his father-in-law when he's the ruler of a million people and Jethro comes to give him advice. He sits down and he listens to his father-in-law, who's not a whole lot older than him, but has schooled him in how you walk with the Lord. And he listened to him. He took care of his wife and his children, and he took care of the nation of Israel. Why? Because he not only had a destiny, but he had the character and the integrity and the determination to continue doing it. See, that's what makes the difference between an empty destiny and a destiny that changes lives and shapes the world. Character and determination. But sadly, there's one part of it that just doesn't all fit it. I got to tell you, there's a spoiler alert. If you haven't already read the book of Exodus, there's a spoiler alert. Moses doesn't completely fulfill his destiny, and he never makes it to the promised land. And why? Still determined, even more skilled in leadership than he was before, because now he's led this groaning, complaining people through the wilderness. He's seen God move in really powerful ways. Still seems to be a man truly of character in all that he has done. And yet in the midst of his success, what stops him in his tracks is that he believes his own press. He fails not because he lacked destiny, not because he lacked determination, and not because he had less than a steadfast character overall. He fails because he buys into his own press. He forgets who he is And in a moment, he takes credit for what only God could do. You see, he didn't fail to deliver. He failed to give credit. You know, I know of a situation right now. I know a very godly individual, a dear brother. And God gave a real destiny, equipped him for the call, put a burning determination in his heart. Saw him do some amazing things for God. But I've also watched over how the last few years I've watched his ministry crumble and in the last year implode because of one thing. The one thing he told me never to do. He said, don't touch the girls, don't touch the gold, and don't touch the glory. And he touched the glory. And it's changed his life and the life of a very large church. What has God spoken over you? What's God wanting to do with your life? What promises are waiting to be fulfilled? What things are burning in your inner man that you know in your heart of hearts that God always meant for you to be and to do? And why do you doubt? Maybe you're doubting yourself because you know the disparity between who God meant for you to be and where you are now. I can tell you that as long as you're drawing breath, there's the opportunity to turn and to face into the heart of God and say, I need fresh revelation for my life. And even if that particular ship has passed, that there can be a new ship come to be, there's things that God will still do with your life. I know that it's not too late because Moses was 80 when he was called. And I know it's not too early because Mary was just a teenager when she was called. Maybe you think it's because of your crisis. Maybe things have happened in life that have not turned out the way that you thought they were supposed to, and instead that your crisis you think is the limit on your life. Criminal record, divorce, hurt, things said about you, lies are true. You know that the context of your crisis is not the limit on your destiny? If that were so, then Moses was just a murderer. Paul was just a murderer. And Jesus was just a thief on the cross. If your crisis is the limit. But you see, for them, it was the context of their destiny. It was the context of their ministry. It was the field in which they plowed, the opportunity that they delved into. It's the place that they began, knowing that with God, the best is yet to come. See, that's the confidence that I have every day when I get up and I lean into the things of God is that I honestly believe in my heart of hearts that the best is yet to come. I don't mean that it won't be difficult. I don't mean that there won't be hardship. I might have to go through a stinking desert with a bunch of grumbling, complaining people to get to the destiny. I might get accused falsely. Can you think of a single prophet or apostle in all of the scripture that wasn't arrested and accused of crimes? Can you think of a single prophet or apostle who didn't at some point break the law? No, because they're not there. Every one of them were broken people whose destiny looked like it was being crashed upon the rocks by circumstances, and in the midst of the context of their crisis, that's where all the good stuff came out of. What good stuff has God planted in your life? What's the next? What's the best that he wants to bring out of that? So I want to challenge you this morning. I want to ask you to do something really uncomfortable. Without music, without hype, I want to ask you this morning, if you're in a place where destiny has yet to be fulfilled, if you're in a place where you are longing for it and it just seems like nothing is coming together to make it happen, if you're in a place where destiny has been stripped out of your life because you just think that God can't use you anymore, you're convinced that you're not on God's list anymore, except maybe the wrong list. If you're in that place where you just feel like God can't use me, won't use me, or I've just blown it too bad and I can't ever be used by God again, I want to challenge you this morning. Let's all stand together. And I want to ask you, would you do something really difficult? Would you step out of your comfort zone this morning and would you come to the front and allow us to pray over you? Let me just ask you to come.